I am 34. The 29th of April, 1987, to the 28th of April, 1988. Above. Who's Bad? By Tim Dooley. I come headlamp down, a faint wire spooling out from my hat. The crush of humans have gone home. 10,000 different footprints, stomped, spent condoms and fireworks into the wet ground. Among them was a glistering black mass. I wasn't sure we should do it, but I kneel down and pick it up. I hold it at arm's length, splayed and shining in the light. Kneeling there, regarding it, hoping to see it. Each sweep of my headlamp brings a subtle ground shudder. I look over my shoulder, the light blinding the accomplice and creating a tall black hole in the rain behind him. Dead certain we'll need this later. I stand and we begin to walk. I carry the great bird at arm's length. By the arch of its wings, the span of which is much greater than my own, we head out into the straight darkness, the thin wire still unspooling from my hat. The satellite fence line shows the boiler smoke of the cabin. We trudge towards it, my leather boots now sodden, more like the living hide they once came from. I now wore the bird like a backpack, my hands wrapped around the great talons on either side of my neck, each step bouncing the wings as if the bird might somehow be jump-started and begin a flight into the night, reflected in the puddles on the ground. I know it's out of time. That's not the point. You don't have to tell me that. Once we reach the cabin, the accomplice pulls a delicate set of nips from a pocket sewn into the sleeve of his waxed cotton coat. He cuts the wisp of wire from my hat, pulls it tight, and wraps it around the barbed wire of the fence line. As the connection is made, a tangled electric sound seemed to emanate from the scrub and misquiet feeds back, swells, passes and undulates through us and the landscape. We stand there for some time, vibrating with and because of the connection until we and it dissipates. We've got 14 more to go. We put the bird in the boot of our car, careful not to disturb the wire, which forms another node. In the cabin, the candle flame, now cold and sleeping, nudges us to do the same. I awake from the night's activities, both vibrating and leaden. The energy does not ring like a bell, but is caught up in the slow, dead metal. Eager to make another connection, uncertain as to when and where we'd make it, I look into my hat, unsure just how much wire is left. Time Queen the Teaser. Fuck off, you Time Queen the Teaser. Fine, I'll do it. The accomplice takes my hat and holds it in front of his face like a mask, just audible through the thick felt. Only come dancing 4 and 2 in the teaser, burning to get that 17 jive. Beat the time, beat the queen. He hands the hat back and we get in the car. 3 hours in, an ashen light just coming up reveals a scissor woman by the roadside, her face a warrant clutching the big black bird by its talons, the slack neck and head resting by her feet. "That's our fucking bird!" As we pass, she swivels into the road, becoming the twins, standing abreast, each woman's arms raised into U-shape, their hands holding the bird by the talons between them, their legs open and their feet touching, so a line traced from foot to crotch to foot to foot to crotch to foot makes the shape of an M. We pull over and spend some moments regarding the twins in the rear view mirror. "Moo moo," we murmur. I don my hat, the wire quivering for connection. Out of the car and around the back to the boot, the accomplice opens it. No bird. Instead, a pile of ash which smells of burnt vinyl. We walk into the street, facing the twins, who still hold their strange pose. The bird between them, wings spread to cover their wombs. The wire spools out of my hat and towards the upraised talons of the bird. The moment it wraps around them, the blackbird's head jerks, and the same tangled, resonant sound that propagated from the previous night's connection joins the growing dawn chorus, a feedback loop increasing with the light. The sound wave swells until the grit on the black top pulses. The accomplice and I look down at our feet, noting a collection of tiny, dried fish between us, vibrating with each wave of feedback. Their glinting bodies shifting from chaos to order with each wave. A new tone rises, writhing around and penetrating through the amplifying harmonics of the feedback and breaks the spell cast by the tiny fish. We look up to see the twins, mouths agape, and the bird now beating its wings, stroking their wombs as it strains to fly straight down. As the tone increases and the harmonics begin to waver, the mammoth feedback builds. An ellipse opens in front of the twins and under the bird. The twins release the bird and it flies straight down into the opening, wire unspooling faster and faster until the bitter end jerks the hat clean off my head. As it sails towards the ellipse, the twins shut their mouths and the hole snaps shut, the hat becoming a kind of anchor, pulsing on the black top under the strain of the bird, still beating its wings somewhere beneath the surface, still bound to the hat by the thin wire. One twin strains to lift the hat, the wire disappearing into a tiny hole where the ellipse had been. The other wraps the wire around her hand and cuts the hat free with her teeth. They choose a pebble to which they tie the wire and leave it there, pinned and trembling in the road. One of the twins puts on the hat and they walk towards us. We look into one another's eyes for a long moment and then down the road. The quick silver bodies of the desiccated little fish form the question. Who's bad?
Below. The Goddess of Vinyl by Pete Andrew. My diary for 1987. April 29th, midnight. Dense fog. There are 34 black candles burning on my birthday cake. The cake itself is pure white. I baked it yesterday using the whites of 6 eggs. But now McDrummond's cake is melting in the dark, like a coal black slag heap flowing down. mock birthdays. For two reasons. One, however drunk you get, you can't block out the fact that it's about women giving birth. A cruel annual reminder that men are mere bit part players, forever compensating for their inadequacies by baking pies in the sky, or writing symphonies, or building empires, or worse. Two, at precisely the moment my father was making the moves that would result in my being born, a man named Percy Dickens, I kid you not, was seeding an even more monstrous creation, the pop chart. This would become the thermometer, barometer and Geiger counter for my generation. So, my birth chart is star-crossed with the pop chart, which explains almost everything. I rip open the first of my birthday cards. On the outside it says, all you need is... dot, dot, dot. And when I open it, a huge phallus pops out with the words, shag, 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 around the rim. It is from Yoko. I'd sent her a copy of The Jam's version of All You Need Is Love last month, and she tracked me down. The next card says, it was 20 years ago today, dot, dot, dot. And inside is a photo of John Lennon, dated April 29th, 1967, my 14th birthday. It's from Paul. I'd sent him a copy too. On the back, he scribbled, hello, King Boy. Thought you'd like to see Johnny on the night he came up with All You Need Is Love. He was visiting the biggest hippie convention of all time, the 14-hour Technicolor Dream at Ali Pali. Everyone who was everywhere was there. The BBC had asked us to be the British bit in the first global satellite broadcast with bits from all round the world. When he got back, he said, this is it, fellas. The age of Aquarius has dawned. I saw it. And where better to announce it to the world than Auntie Beeb Goes Global? He had some lyrics for All You Need Is Love to the tune of Three Blind Mice. He said, we'll show those knobheads what loving your neighbour really means. We'll open with the fucking French national anthem. Good luck with the copyright stuff. Cheers, Paul. No one played the Jam's version. I'm not sure we wanted it played. We just wanted it to float off as Shelley did with his paper boats. Shelley was the first hippie. John was the last. At 9:36 p.m. on June 25th, 1967, he achieved what every hippie ever wanted to do. Announced to the world it was the time for love and peace. But unlike every other hippie, he actually had the talent and opportunity to do it. It failed. Hate, hunger and war carried on. He cut his hair. A 15-year-old Bob Geldof watched it and later remembered about the satellites linking everyone together. So it came to pass that John begat Live Aid 2. That failed as well. The next card is stuck to a VHS tape labelled The Day the Music Died. It's from Ken Campbell. I turn on the telly and push the tape into the machine. The Beatles' Revolution plays against clips of pretty people running, cycling and lifting weights. Lennon's gritty voice doubled by that distorting guitar. Suddenly there's a big tick on the screen. A penny drops. The song has been licensed to Nike to sell shoes. 100 million pennies drop. 1987? What the fuck is going on? I raise my hand and extinguish all 34 candles in one raging blow. July 29th, before dawn. I just spilt my beer on the Financial Times. Ben and Jerry's Ice Cream have signed an agreement with Jerry Garcia. Yes, the head of the house band of Haight Ashbury Hippiedom, for a new flavour called Cherry Garcia. We're at a rave somewhere off the M6. I reach for my wallet and scatter the contents into the strobe-lit maelstrom. The DJ opens his wooden crate of LPs. A smoky spiral of light rises, coalescing into a female form. I recognise Sam Fox, naked except for the diamond on her third eye. It is precisely 3 a.m. I am the goddess of vinyl. Know this, an analogue recording captures a whole fractal moment. So when your diamond stylus hits the disc, it brings back to life everything that was present in the room. Not only the sound, but the breath, the temperature, the pressure, the love, the lust, the angels, the undines and salamanders. So you will go down to Strawberry Fields, just as it arose in Lennon's mind that day in Abbey Road. You will paint it black in the same strokes as Jagger and Richards. And if you stay true to the trail, you will see right through the fog of addictions, delusions and distractions that keep humanity chained. This does not suit the suits. Hear me. Soon every recording ever will be digitized. That is, every second of sound will be cut up into at least 44,100 pieces, emitting everything that is not a simple sound wave within the human hearing range. The soul will remain on the cutting room floor. You need to know this. Yes, I needed to know. A record will no longer be enough to penetrate the fog. It will need mythology, posters, graffiti, a cast of thousands, and a fragment of Hendrix. My diary for 1988. January 29th, 6 a.m. I awake in a drenching sweat. The Wizard of Oz, played by Percy Dickens, is speaking. Yes, I shall grant all your foolish requests, but first you must bring me a copy of NME, showing you have a number one hit. How the fuck do you make a number one? The Accomplice. Are you awake?